a mile and a half of track. I pictured the aerodynamics of an empty yogurt container. Lightweight plastic, cup-shaped, a torn foil closure flapping like an air brake. I pictured throwing one, hard. It would sail and stall in the air. It would travel 10 feet, tops. A mile and a half of track, 10 feet of shoulder, on the left, on the driver's side. I felt millions shrink to thousands. Then I felt them expand all the way back up to billions. "Good news and bad news," I said. "I think you're right. So you've cut the search area down by about 99%, maybe more, which is good."
"But?"
"If he was in a vehicle, did he throw it out at all?" Summer was silent. "He could have just dropped it on the floor," I said, "or chucked it in the back."
"Not if it was a pool vehicle."
"So maybe he put it in a sidewalk trash can later, after he parked, or maybe he took it home with him."
"Maybe. It's a 50-50 situation."
70-30 at best," I said.
"We should look anyhow."
I nodded, braced the palms of my hands on the windshield's header rail, and vaulted down to the ground. It was January, and the conditions were pretty good. February would have been better. In a temperate northern hemisphere climate, vegetation dies right back in February. It gets as thin and sparse as it ever will. But January was okay. The undergrowth was low and the ground was flat and brown. It was the color of dead bracken and leaf litter. There was no snow. The landscape was even and neutral and organic. It was a good background. I figured a container for a dairy product would be bright white, or cream, or maybe pink for a strawberry or a raspberry flavor. Whatever, it would be a helpful color. It wouldn't be black, for instance. Nobody puts a dairy product in a black container. So if it was there, and we came close to it, we would find it. We checked a 10-foot belt all around the perimeter of the crime scene. Found nothing. So we went back to the track and set off north and east along it. Summer walked 5 feet from the track's right-hand edge. I walked 5 feet to her right. If we both scanned both ways, we would cover a 15-foot strip with two pairs of eyes on the crucial 5-foot lane between us, which is exactly where the container should have landed, according to my aerodynamic theory. We walked slow, maybe half speed. I used short paces and settled into a rhythm of moving my head from one side to the other with every step. I felt pretty stupid doing it. I must have looked like a penguin. But it was an efficient method. I lapsed into a kind of autopilot mode, and the ground blurred beneath me. I wasn't seeing individual leaves and twigs and blades of grass. I was tuning out what should be there. I felt like something that shouldn't be there would leap right out at me. We walked for 10 minutes and found nothing.
"Swap,"
Summer said. We changed places and moved on. We saw 1 million tons of forest debris and nothing else. Army posts are kept scrupulously clean. The weekly litter patrol is a religion. Outside the wire, we would have been tripping over all kinds of stuff. Inside, there was nothing. Nothing at all. We did another 10 minutes, another 300 yards, and then we paused and swapped positions again. Moving slow in the cold air was chilling me. I stared at the earth like a maniac. I felt we were close to our best chance. A mile and a half is 2,640 yards. I figured the first few hundred and the last few hundred were poor hunting grounds. At first, the guy would have been feeling the pure urge to escape. Then, close to the post buildings, he knew he had to be ready and done and composed. So the middle stretch was where he would have sanitized. Anyone with any sense would have coasted to a stop, breathed in, breathed out, and thought things through. He would have buzzed his window down and felt the night air on his face. I slowed down and looked harder, left and right, left and right. Saw nothing. "Did he have blood on him?" I said.
"A little, maybe,"
Summer said on my right. I didn't look at her. I kept my eyes on the ground.
"On his gloves," she said.
"Maybe on his shoes." "Less than he might have expected," I said. Unless he was a doctor, he would have expected some pretty bad bleeding.
So?
So he didn't use a pool car. He expected blood and didn't want to risk leaving it all over a vehicle that someone else was going to drive the next day.
So like you said, with his own car, he'll have thrown it in the back. So we aren't going to find anything out here.
I nodded, said nothing, walked on. We covered the whole of the middle section and found nothing. 2,000 yards of dormant organic material and not one single man-made item. Not a cigarette butt, not a scrap of paper, no rusted cans, no empty bottles. It was a real tribute to the post commander's enthusiasm, but it was disappointing. We stopped with the main post buildings clearly visible 300 yards in front of us. I want to backtrack, I said. I want to do the middle part again.
Okay, she said. About face.
She turned, and we switched positions. We decided we would cover each 300-yard section the opposite way around from the first pass. Where I had walked inboard, I would walk outboard, and vice versa. No real reason, except our perspectives were different, and we felt we should alternate. I was more than a foot taller than she was, and therefore simple trigonometry meant I could see more than a foot farther in either direction. She was closer to the ground, and she claimed her eyes were good for detail. We walked back, slow and steady. Nothing in the first section. We swapped positions. I took up station 10 feet from the track, scanned left and right. The wind was in our faces, and my eyes started watering from the cold. I put my hands in my pockets. Nothing in the second section. We changed positions again. I walked 5 feet from the track, parallel to its edge. Nothing in the third section. We changed yet again. I did math in my head as we walked. So far, we'd swept a 15-foot swathe along a 2,340-yard length. That made 11,700 square yards, which was a hair better than 2.4 acres. Nearly 2.5 acres out of 100,000. Odds of 40,000 to 1, approximately. Better than driving to town and spending a dollar on a lottery ticket. But not much better. We walked on. The wind got stronger and we got colder. We saw nothing. Then I saw something. It was far to my right, maybe 20 feet from me. Not a yogurt container. Something else. I almost ignored it, because it was well outside the zone of possibility. No lightweight, plastic, un-aerodynamic item could have gone that far after being thrown from a car on the track. So my eyes spotted it, and my brain processed it and rejected it instantly, on a purely pre-programmed basis. And then it hung up on it, out of pure animal instinct. Because it looked like a snake. The lizard part of my brain whispered, "Snake." And I got that little primeval jolt of fright that had kept my ancestors alive and well way back in evolution. It was all over in a split second. It was smothered immediately. The modern, educated part of my mind stepped in and said, "No snakes here in January, bud. Way too cold." I breathed out and moved on a step, and then paused to look back, purely out of curiosity. There was a curved black shape in the dead grass. Belt? Garden hose? But it was settled deeper down among the stiff brown stalks than something made of leather or fabric or rubber could have fallen. It was right down there among the roots. Therefore, it was heavy. And it had to be heavy to have traveled so far from the track. Therefore, it was metal. Solid, not tubular. Therefore, it was unfamiliar. Very little military equipment is curved. I walked over, got close, knelt down. It was a crowbar. A black-painted crowbar, all matted on one end with blood and hair. I stayed with it and sent Summer to get the truck. She must have jogged all the way back for it, because she returned sooner than I expected and out of breath. "Do we have an evidence bag?" I asked.
"It's not evidence," she said. "Training accidents don't need evidence."
"I'm not planning to take it to court," I said. "I just don't want to touch it is all. Don't want my prints on it. That might give Willard ideas. She checked the back of the truck.
No evidence bags,
she said. I paused. Normally, you take exquisite care not to contaminate evidence with foreign prints and hairs and fibers, so as not to confuse the investigation. If you screw up, you can get your ass chewed by the prosecutors. But this time, the motivation had to be different, with Willard in the mix. If I screwed up, I could get my ass sent to jail. Means, motive, opportunity, my prints on the weapon. Too good to be true. If the training accident story came back to bite him, he would jump all over anything he could get.
We could bring a specialist out here,
Summer said. She was standing right behind me. I could sense her there. Can't involve anyone else, I said. I don't even want to involve you. She came around beside me and crouched low, smoothed stalks of grass out of the way with her hands for a closer look. Don't touch it, I said.
Wasn't planning to,
she said. We looked at it together, close up. It was a handheld wrecking bar forged from octagonal section steel. It looked like a high-quality tool. It looked brand new. It was painted gloss black with the kind of paint people use on boats or cars. It was shaped a little like an alto saxophone. The main shaft was about 3 feet long, slightly S-shaped, and it had a shallow curve on one end and a full curve on the other, the shape of a capital letter J. Both tips were flattened and notched into claws, ready for levering nails out of planks of wood. Its design was streamlined and evolved, and simple and brutal.
Hardly used,
Summer said. Never used, I said. Not for construction, anyway. I stood up. We don't need to print it, I said. We can assume the guy was wearing gloves when he swung it. Summer stood up next to me.
We don't need to type the blood, either,
she said.
We can assume it's carbones.
I said nothing.
We could just leave it here,
Summer said. No, I said. We can't do that. I bent down and untied my right boot. Pulled the lace all the way out and used a reef knot to tie the ends together. That gave me a closed loop about 15 inches in diameter. I draped it over my right palm and dragged the free end across the dead stubble until I snagged it under the crowbar's tip. Then I closed my fist and lifted the heavy steel weight carefully out of the grass. I held it up, like a proud angler with a fish. "Let's go," I said. I limped around to the front passenger seat with the crowbar swinging gently in midair and my boot half off. I sat close to the transmission tunnel and steadied the crowbar against the floor just enough to stop it touching my legs as the vehicle moved.
Where to?
Summer asked. The mortuary, I said. I was hoping the pathologist and his staff would be out eating breakfast, but they weren't. They were all in the building, working. The pathologist himself caught us in the lobby. He was on his way somewhere with a file in his hand. He looked at us, and then he looked at the trophy dangling from my bootlace. It took him half a second to understand what it was, and the other half to realize it put us all in a very awkward situation. We could come back later, I said. When you're not here. No, he said. We'll go to my office. He led the way. I watched him walk. He was a small, dark man with short legs, brisk, competent, a little older than me. He seemed nice enough, and I guessed he wasn't stupid. Very few medics are. They have all kinds of complicated stuff to learn before they get to be where they want to be, and I guessed he wasn't unethical. Very few medics were that either, in my experience. They're scientists at heart. And scientists generally retain a good-faith interest in facts and the truth. Or at least they retain some kind of innate curiosity. All of which was good, because this guy's attitude was going to be crucial. He could stay out of our way, or he could sell us out with a single phone call. His office was a plain square room full of original-issue gray steel desks and file cabinets. It was crowded. There were framed diplomas on the walls. There were shelves full of books and manuals. No specimen jars, no weird stuff pickled in formaldehyde. It could have been an army lawyer's office, except the diplomas were from medical schools, not law schools.